Welcome to the deep dive. This time, you've given us a real doozy excerpts from a doctoral thesis called Reforming Christian Education in Congregations as the Praxis of Growing Disciples for a Missional Church.
Yeah.
Wowza, right.
Sounds intense.
But we've distilled it down to the good stuff, how churches are tackling teaching and learning in this crazy 21st century.
What's fascinating is how this thesis blends sociology, education, even theology.
Yeah.
To really grapple with how congregations adapt in a constantly changing world.
It's a lot.
How they shape beliefs,
yeah,
make meaning, and get people ready to actually live out their faith.
Yeah.
You know?
Right off the bat, the thesis makes this point that no research is truly neutral.
Right.
Like, we all come to the table with our own baggage.
Absolutely.
Preconceived notions about how the world works.
The thesis highlights this by looking at how different fields approach research.
Okay.
Social scientists, educators, theologians.
Mm-hmm.
They might be asking similar questions, but their methods,
yeah,
their assumptions,
yeah,
can lead to totally different, even conflicting conclusions.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine these different fields of like overlapping circles,
okay,
where they intersect.
Yeah.
Things get really interesting.
That's where the good stuff is.
Exactly.
So understanding those different perspectives, those lenses,
yeah,
is key to understanding the research itself. And speaking of lenses,
mm,
the thesis dives into some pretty heady concepts.
Mm.
Objectivism versus constructionism, positivism versus interpretivism.
Right.
How would you explain those ideas to someone who hasn't, you know, spent years in academia?
Well, at the core is about how we understand meaning.
Okay.
Is meaning something fixed, something external, you know, out there?
Uh-huh.
Or is it something we actively create through our experiences, our interactions?
Okay.
This research leans towards the idea that we construct our own meaning.
Which makes sense when you're talking about faith.
Right.
Our beliefs aren't just handed down. They're shaped by our experiences, community, struggles even.
Absolutely.
And that leads to how this thesis explores how social forces and individual choices interact.
Yes.
And it shapes what actually happens in educational settings.
Exactly.
This is where it gets juicy. The thesis brings up this concept called habitus.
Yeah.
Sounds like something you'd hear at a yoga studio.
Right.
But it's actually this sociological term.
It is.
So break it down for us.
Habitus, coined by sociologist Pierre Bourdieu, refers to the deeply ingrained habits, beliefs, values that we pick up from our social surroundings.
Okay.
Think of it as like the unwritten curriculum,
uh-huh,
you know, that shapes our perceptions and actions.
So if we apply this to a church setting,
yes,
it's not just about the official teachings or doctrines,
right,
but all the unspoken norms, the expectations
that's
that
right,
shape how people actually interact and learn,
mm-hmm,
for example.
Imagine a congregation where sermons are very formal lectures from a pulpit.
Yeah.
The unspoken expectation there might be that learning happens passively just by listening to the authority figure.
Right.
That habitus, that ingrained way of being, would influence how people engage with the material, even if they aren't consciously aware of it.
Oh, that's so interesting. That's such a good example because it highlights how this habitus can really have a huge impact.
It does.
So if you're trying to shift how your church approaches learning,
uh-huh,
you need to understand its habitus.
You do.
What are the unspoken rules already there? What are the expectations?
What are you up against?
Right.
Exactly. And that leads us to the next layer. The thesis explores practical theology.
Okay.
And its various perspectives on how the church shapes faith and action in the real world.
Practical theology, I'll admit, makes me think of theology you can actually use.
Yeah.
So is that what we're talking about here?
You could say that practical theology aims to connect theological ideas to lived experience.
Okay.
To bridge the gap between belief and action.
Okay.
The thesis delves into several key approaches.
Mm.
Hermeneutical, Bourdieuan, Neo-Aristotelian, and Neo-Barthian.
Whoa. Those are some big words.
Right.
Can you give us the gist? What's the core difference between these approaches, and why should our listener care?
The central question is, where does meaning-making come from?
Okay.
Does it originate from established doctrine, cultural habits, the actions of God,
uh-huh,
or our own reflections on our experiences?
Interesting.
This thesis, drawing heavily on Bourdieu, leans towards a more embodied, participatory view of faith.
Okay.
Meaning isn't something imposed from the outside,
yeah,
but something we actively co-create
Okay.
through our lived experience and engagement with our communities.
So it's not about just passively absorbing information,
no,
but actively engaging with faith in a way that shapes our actions in the world.
Exactly.
Kind of like learning to ride a bike.
Yes.
You can read all the manuals you want,
right,
but you don't really understand it until you get on and start pedaling.
That's a fantastic analogy.
And that brings us to the concept of praxis.
Yes.
Which is central to this whole thesis.
Yes.
Christian education isn't just about transmitting information. It's about shaping the entire life of the congregation, influencing how people live out their faith in tangible ways.
Mm-hmm.
Praxis, another one of those academic terms that sounds intimidating.
I know.
But it's probably pretty straightforward when you break it down.
It is.
Help us break it down.
Praxis is simply the interplay of theory and action.
Okay.
What we believe influences how we act, and how we act shapes what we believe.
Yeah.
It's a constant back and forth.
A cycle.
Think about how volunteering at a soup kitchen might change your understanding of poverty.
Yeah.
And then that deeper understanding might inspire you to take further action.
Oh, that's a good example.
Like advocating for policy changes.
Mm-hmm.
Or donating to organizations fighting hunger.
It's like a cycle, a dance between our beliefs and our actions.
Yes.
Each one informing and transforming the other.
It is.
Now, the thesis itself uses a research method called shared praxis.
Right.
Which I'm guessing isn't about sharing yoga mats.
No, not quite.
What does that entail exactly?
It's a cyclical process.
Yeah.
It starts with observation,
uh-huh,
then moves to reflection, then interpretation, and finally action.
Okay.
The researchers conducted in-depth interviews with congregational leaders.
Okay.
And used a technique called thick description to capture the nuances of how different churches approach Christian education.
Thick description. I like that.
Yeah.
Is that like taking really, really detailed notes?
It's more than just detail.
Okay.
Thick description is about capturing the context, the meaning, the significance of what's being observed.
Okay.
It's not just describing what happened,
uh-huh,
but exploring the why behind the what.
So instead of just saying the church held a potluck,
yeah,
you delve into the meaning behind it.
Right.
The potluck was a way for this community to express their shared values of hospitality and generosity, strengthening their bonds and creating a welcoming space for newcomers.
That's a perfect example.
Something like that.
Yes. It's about going beyond the surface level.
Okay.
And getting at those deeper cultural currents at play. And using this shared praxis method, the thesis explores Christian education through three interconnected lenses: learning communities, leadership, and mission.
Okay.
Imagine these lenses as three overlapping circles.
Okay, like a Venn diagram.
Similar to the research arenas we discussed earlier.
So we've got our three lenses: learning communities, leadership, and mission.
Yes.
Before we dive into each of those, can you give us a sneak peek at the questions they're trying to answer in each area? What are they looking for?
Absolutely. When it comes to learning communities, they're asking, how do congregations create spaces where people can actually learn and grow in their faith?
Uh-huh.
What are the key elements of a truly effective learning environment?
Yeah.
What makes some learning communities thrive while others struggle?
That's a great starting point, because it makes sense that creating the right environment is crucial.
It is.
You can't just throw information at people and expect them to automatically absorb it.
Right.
The context matters.
It does. What about leadership?
Yeah. What's the focus there?
In the context of Christian education, uh-huh, they're exploring what qualities are essential for effective leadership.
Okay.
How do leaders inspire, guide, empower others to grow in their faith?
Yeah.
What makes someone a truly impactful teacher or mentor in a faith community?
Yeah. Is it charisma, theological knowledge, something else entirely?
Those are the questions.
So it's not just about being like a walking encyclopedia of biblical knowledge,
no,
but having those skills and qualities,
right,
to create that space where people can connect with their faith and with each other.
Exactly.
And lastly, mission.
Yes.
What's the lens focused on there?
This is where the rubber meets the road.
Okay.
They're looking at how a congregation's understanding of its mission,
huh,
shapes what it teaches and how it teaches.
You make sense.
Does the church primarily see itself as a beacon of social justice,
right,
a community dedicated to service, or a fellowship focused on spreading the gospel?
Right.
And how does that sense of mission translate into the educational programs and practices of the congregation?
That's a fascinating question, because it makes sense that a church with a strong social justice focus would approach education differently than a church focused on evangelism or personal spiritual growth.
Of course.
Right. Their goals and priorities would totally shape their methods.
Exactly. Now, underpinning all of this research is a methodology called grounded theory.
Grounded theory, does that mean they're bringing things down to earth as opposed to getting lost in abstract theories?
That's a great way to put it. Grounded theory is all about letting insights emerge from the data.
Okay.
Rather than imposing preconceived categories.
Got it.
It's a way of being open to surprise.
Okay.
To letting the voices and experiences of the congregations themselves guide the research.
Uh-huh.
It allows for a more nuanced understanding of the complexities of congregational life.
So instead of coming in with a checklist of what a good Christian education program should look like,
right.
They're letting the congregations themselves tell the story.
Exactly.
So revealing what's actually working and what challenges they're facing. I appreciate that approach. It feels more authentic and respectful.
It is. And that leads us to another key idea emphasized in the thesis, epistemological lenses and proximity.
Okay, that sounds like something you'd need a decoder ring to understand.
That sounds a bit jargony.
Break it down for us. What are epistemological lenses and why is proximity so important?
Essentially, it's about recognizing that each congregation is unique,
okay,
shaped by its own particular context history and the lived experiences of its members.
Mm-hmm.
The thesis uses a visual representation of these lenses to highlight the different layers of perspective involved.
Okay.
It's a reminder that there's no one-size-fits-all model for Christian education.
So instead of imposing a prepackaged program,
yeah,
it's about taking the time to understand the unique story of each congregation.
Exactly.
To listen deeply to their needs and aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting close and being present and seeing the world through their eyes.
Yes.
Kind of like what we're doing right now with this deep dive. We're taking this dense academic research and trying to extract the insights that are relevant to you, our listener.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting up close and personal with these ideas, trying to make them accessible and meaningful.
That's a fantastic analogy.
And speaking of conclusions, I think we've covered a lot of ground in this first segment.
We have.
We've explored the idea that research is never neutral.
Uh-huh.
Delved into the power of habitus in shaping learning.
Yeah.
Touched on different approaches to practical theology,
mm-hmm,
and embraced the idea of Christian education as an ongoing process of praxis.
The interplay of belief and action.
Yes, exactly.
We've also introduced the key research methods used in the thesis.
Right.
Shared praxis-grounded theory and the importance of proximity and thick description.
Like, we've laid a solid foundation for understanding the core arguments of this research.
We have. But the journey continues.
It does.
In our next segment, we'll dive even deeper into the specific findings from those congregational interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Uncovering what's actually working on the ground.
Okay.
And what challenges churches are facing in their efforts to nurture faith and discipleship.
Can't wait. Stay tuned.
We'll be back.
Welcome back. All right, so we've laid out the theoretical framework.
Yeah.
Now let's get down to brass tacks. What were some of the big takeaways when those congregational leaders talked about Christian education? Like, what's actually happening out there in the real world?
One of the most striking things was the sheer diversity of approaches to Christian education.
Makes sense.
There's no magic bullet.
Right.
No one-size-fits-all program that guarantees success.
Right. Every church is different.
What works beautifully in one context,
yeah,
might totally bomb in another.
Yeah, that makes sense. Every church has its own personality, its own history.
Its own set of strengths and challenges.
Exactly what works for a small rural congregation with deep roots in the community might not resonate with a large urban church that draws people from diverse backgrounds.
Exactly. And the researchers emphasized the need for what they called thick description.
I like that term.
Really taking the time to understand each congregation's unique context.
Okay.
Delving into the nuances of their demographics, location, theological leanings, even the overall culture of the community.
So it's not about finding some prepackaged program and trying to force fit it into every setting.
Whoa.
It's about recognizing that each church is like this living, breathing organism.
Yes.
With its own unique DNA.
Exactly.
You need to understand that DNA before you can start prescribing solutions.
Precisely. It's about starting with observation and deep listening.
Yeah.
Not preconceived notions. And speaking of understanding the nuances,
okay,
the researchers found that truly effective Christian education programs weren't just like tacked onto the side.
Right.
They were deeply embedded in the life and culture of the congregation.
Yeah, woven into the fabric of the community.
It's like the difference between a plant that's been carefully cultivated in fertile soil,
mm-hmm,
versus one that's just stuck in a pot with some generic potting mix.
Totally. You can tell the difference in how they thrive.
Right. And this organic integration was often driven by another crucial element, strong, passionate leadership.
Makes sense.
The researchers found that dedicated and visionary leaders made all the difference in creating that vibrant learning environment.
It's true. I've seen it firsthand. A good leader can inspire, motivate, create a space where people feel empowered to learn and grow. What did they pinpoint as those essential leadership qualities, though? What makes a great Christian education leader?
Well, the congregational leaders they interviewed highlighted qualities like vision.
Okay.
The ability to articulate a clear and compelling direction for the educational ministry.
Uh-huh. Passion.
Passion, of course, that contagious enthusiasm for faith and learning that inspires others. Commitment. A deep dedication to the work.
Yeah.
Even when it's challenging.
Right. It's not always easy.
And they stress the importance of understanding the community's needs, being attuned to the hopes, fears, and aspirations of the people they serve.
So it's not just about being a theological expert.
No.
It's about combining that knowledge with strong relational skills, a deep understanding of the community, and a genuine passion for nurturing faith.
It's about being a shepherd, a guide, a mentor.
Yeah, not just a lecturer.
You got it. And the researchers found that the most effective leaders often shared another key trait. They were themselves lifelong learners.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Constantly seeking to deepen their own understanding of faith and how to share it with others. They modeled that curiosity and growth that they were encouraging in others.
That's inspiring because it's not about having all the answers, but being willing to keep asking questions, keep exploring, keep growing alongside the community you're serving.
Exactly. And this lifelong learner mentality connects beautifully to another major theme that emerged from the research, the dynamic interplay between learning and action.
Ah, praxis.
Yes, praxis.
We talked about that back and forth between what we believe and how we live it out.
Exactly.
Each one shaping and transforming the other.
The researchers found that the congregations who were most effective at nurturing discipleship were those who intentionally blurred the lines between learning and action.
Okay, so they created opportunities for people to put their faith into practice.
Yes, to move beyond theoretical knowledge and experience the transformative power of living out their beliefs in tangible ways.
So it's not just head knowledge.
Yeah.
It's about connecting faith to real-world action.
Mm-hmm. Did they give any examples of how congregations were putting this into practice?
Yeah, what did this learning action dance look like?
Oh, they found a wide range of creative approaches.
Like what?
Some churches integrated service projects directly into their Sunday school curriculum.
Oh, that's cool.
Giving kids a chance to apply what they were learning about compassion by volunteering at a food bank or organizing a clothing drive.
Love that.
Others had youth groups partner with local organizations to address community issues, like cleaning up a park or raising awareness about environmental concerns.
That's awesome.
Still others offered adult education classes. That explored the theological underpinnings of social justice issues, encouraging participants to get involved in advocacy efforts.
Wow, those are fantastic examples.
Right.
It shows how learning can become so much more engaging and impactful when it's connected to a sense of purpose.
Yes.
When it's given wings to fly beyond the walls of the church and into the heart of the community.
It's about embodying faith, not just studying it.
Exactly. And this emphasis on action wasn't random or haphazard.
Yeah.
The researchers found that a congregation's understanding of its mission profoundly shaped what and how it taught. The two were intertwined.
They were.
So a church that sees its primary mission as evangelism might focus more on teaching apologetics, equipping people to share their beliefs with others.
Right.
While a church focused on social justice might prioritize teaching about caring for the poor and oppressed, challenging people to get involved in advocacy and activism.
That's a great example. Mm. The researchers observed a fascinating spectrum of approaches, each reflecting the unique missional heartbeat of the congregation. Some churches pour their energy into nurturing the spiritual growth of their members.
Okay.
Creating rich learning environments for prayer meditation, deeper exploration of scripture. Others felt a strong call to engage in social action and advocacy, channeling their educational efforts into equipping people to be agents of change in their communities.
So many different approaches.
And many embraced a blend of these approaches, finding creative ways to weave together spiritual formation and social action.
It makes sense that a congregation's sense of purpose, its reason for being, would inform its educational priorities. Did the researchers find any correlation between a particular missional focus and the effectiveness of their Christian education program? Were some missions inherently better at creating vibrant learning environments?
That's a complex question, and the researchers were careful to avoid making judgments about which missional focus was better or more effective.
Right.
They recognized that each congregation has its own unique calling and context. However, they did observe that congregations who had a clearly articulated sense of mission were often more intentional and strategic in their approach to Christian education.
Okay.
They knew their why, which helped them to define the what and the how of their educational efforts.
So knowing your purpose, your driving force, helps you to focus your energy and
Yes.
create a more cohesive and impactful learning experience.
Like having a compass that guides your journey.
Exactly. And the researchers also made an important point. A congregation's mission isn't static,
It can evolve.
right? It can change over time, influenced by changing demographics, cultural shifts, new leadership, even just the promptings of the Spirit.
Absolutely.
So it's not a one-time decision etched in stone,
Yeah.
but an ongoing process of discernment and adaptation.
As a congregation's mission evolves,
Yeah.
so too should its approach to Christian education.
Right. What worked 10 years ago might not be relevant or effective today. It
Exactly.
sounds like they're advocating for a flexible and responsive approach to Christian education,
Yes.
one that takes into account the unique context and evolving needs of each congregation. A bit like a jazz ensemble. There's a basic structure,
Yeah.
but there's also room for improvisation and adaptation responding to the energy of the moment.
That's a brilliant analogy.
It captures that essence of what the researchers observed,
Yeah.
a dynamic interplay of structure and spontaneity, tradition and innovation.
The key takeaway is that there's no one-size-fits-all model.
Right.
What matters most is being intentional, reflective, and responsive to the needs of the community.
And to the promptings of the Spirit.
Yeah.
So it's about being willing to learn, adapt, and grow alongside the people we serve.
Embrace the journey.
Yeah.
Recognize that we don't have all the answers.
And that brings us to another key takeaway, the importance of embracing the messiness of real life,
Yes.
recognizing that faith isn't always neat and tidy.
It's often messy, complex, full of contradictions.
Messiness. That's interesting. We often think of church as a place of order and tradition, a sanctuary from the chaos of the world. How did they define messiness in the context of Christian education?
They found that real-life congregations are full of complexities, diverse perspectives, even disagreements.
Makes sense.
People come to faith with different backgrounds, different experiences, different ways of processing the world, and that diversity, those differences can create friction, challenge, and yes, even a bit of messiness.
I guess that's not surprising. Churches are made up of people.
Yes.
People are messy. We bring our baggage, our doubts, our questions, our struggles into the community.
Exactly. And the researchers argue that this messiness isn't something to be feared or avoided. It's actually a sign of life, a sign that people are actively engaging with their faith, wrestling with tough questions, trying to figure out how to live out their beliefs in a complex world.
And it's in that wrestling, in that grappling, that genuine growth often happens.
Right.
So it's not about seeking a sanitized, perfectly polished version of faith,
Right.
but about embracing the raw, the real, the unfiltered experiences of people who are on a journey together.
It's about creating a space where it's okay to ask hard questions, to doubt, to disagree, and to grow through those challenges.
And that kind of environment, one that welcomes messiness and embraces diversity of thought,
Yes.
requires a particular kind of leadership.
It does.
Leadership, again, it seems to be the crucial ingredient
It often is.
that can make or break a congregation's approach to Christian education. So, what qualities are needed to create this kind of open and accepting learning environment? What does messy leadership look like?
The researchers found that effective leaders in this context weren't afraid to lean into the tension to facilitate difficult conversations and to encourage respectful dialogue, even when people had differing viewpoints. They understood that conflict, when handled well, can be a catalyst for growth and deeper understanding.
So it's not about shutting down dissent or imposing a single right answer.
It's about creating a space where different perspectives can be heard, respected, and explored. It's about facilitating a conversation, not dictating a doctrine.
I like that. And they also highlighted the importance of humility in leadership,
Yes,
which
right.
seems a bit counterintuitive. We often think of leaders as needing to be confident, assertive, maybe even a bit larger than life.
Right.
How does humility fit into this picture?
While confidence is important, the researchers found that effective leaders were also deeply humble. they were willing to admit when they didn't know something to learn from others.
Okay.
And to empower those around them. They weren't afraid to share power, to recognize that they didn't have all the answers.
Yeah.
And to create a space where everyone felt valued and respected.
So it's about being a guide on the side, not a sage on the stage.
Exactly.
It's about creating a collaborative learning environment.
Yep.
Not a top-down lecture hall. And in a faith context, I can see how that approach would be particularly powerful. It models a way of being that's rooted in humility and openness, reflecting the teachings of Jesus himself.
Beautifully said. The researchers consistently found that this kind of humble leadership fostered a more authentic and empowering learning environment, one where people felt safe to be vulnerable, to ask questions, and to grow together.
It's a beautiful picture. They're painting a vision of Christian education that's both challenging and inspiring.
Yeah.
One that embraces complexity, encourages dialogue, and nurtures growth in a way that honors the unique context and calling of each congregation. It's about moving beyond a one-size-fits-all model and embracing the messiness, the diversity, and the dynamic energy of real-life faith communities.
That's a fantastic summary.
So we've journeyed from the theoretical underpinnings to the practical realities of Christian education in the 21st century.
We've seen how context, leadership, mission, even a bit of messiness can shape the landscape of faith formation.
But our exploration isn't over yet.
No, it isn't.
In our final segment.
Yes.
We'll shift our focus to you, our listener.
Okay.
And explore some of the practical implications of this research for your own faith journey. What does this mean for you?
Right.
How can you apply these insights to your own experiences in a faith community?
We'll be back after a quick break to unpack those questions and wrap up our deep dive.
Stay tuned. Okay, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Christian education.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have, from habitus to messy leadership.
Yeah, all those fun concepts.
But let's bring it home now. What does this all mean for you, our listener?
Right. How can you actually apply these insights in your own faith community?
Yeah. Because it's great to talk about theory.
It is.
But how do we put it into practice?
Well, this research is a call to action.
Okay.
It invites all of us to be more conscious, more intentional about how we learn and grow within our faith communities.
So it's not enough to just show up on Sunday morning and passively absorb whatever's being taught.
Not at all.
We need to be active participants in shaping our own faith journeys.
Yes. And contributing to the learning environment around us.
So embracing that lifelong learner mindset.
Exactly.
Always seeking to deepen our understanding of faith and how it intersects with our lives.
And the world around us.
But how do we actually do that?
Right. What are some practical steps?
Yeah, give us the girds.
One simple but powerful step is to become more aware of the habitus of our congregations.
Oh, habitus. Back to that.
Yeah. What are those unspoken norms and expectations
that
shape how people engage with learning?
Okay, are those norms helpful or are they actually hindering growth? That's such a good point because once we're aware of those unwritten rules, we can start to challenge them or reinforce them depending on whether they're contributing to a healthy learning environment or not. It's like becoming aware of the currents in a river.
Oh, I like that.
Once you know where they're flowing,
you
can either paddle with them or steer against them.
Exactly. Another practical step is to be adventurous.
Oh, I like that.
Seek out learning opportunities that go beyond the traditional Sunday school class or Bible study.
Think outside the stained glass box.
Yes. Explore different avenues of learning, whether it's through service projects, book discussions, retreats, or even just having those deep, soul-stirring conversations with fellow believers.
Yeah.
Learning can happen anywhere, anytime.
That's a good reminder because it doesn't have to be confined to a formal setting.
No.
Or a specific time slot.
It can be woven into the fabric of our lives.
Yeah.
And speaking of weaving things together, this research also encourages us to embrace the messiness of faith, right?
And the messiness, we talked about that a lot.
We did. It's worth reiterating.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Embracing the messiness means being willing to grapple with those tough questions, to disagree respectfully.
Yeah.
And to acknowledge that there isn't always one right answer.
So it's okay to not have everything figured out.
It is.
To sit with the uncertainty and wrestle with those big existential questions.
Exactly. Faith isn't about having all the answers. It's about the journey, the seeking, the wrestling. And that kind of environment, one that welcomes those struggles, requires a certain kind of leadership.
Ah, leadership. There it is again. It seems to be this recurring theme.
It is.
The crucial ingredient that can make or break a congregation's approach to Christian education. And I bet this is where humility comes into play again, right?
Absolutely. Leaders who are willing to admit they don't know everything.
Yeah.
And who empower others to contribute their own insights and perspectives.
You nailed it. The congregations that were most successful in fostering genuine learning and growth had leaders who embodied this humility.
They did.
They created a space where everyone felt valued, respected, and empowered to contribute.
It's about creating a culture of collaboration and shared discovery.
Yeah.
Not a hierarchy where knowledge flows only from the top down.
Right. And in a faith context, that feels especially powerful. It's a way of being that aligns with the teachings of Jesus, who emphasized service and humility.
Beautifully said. It's about moving away from the idea of the leader as the sole holder of knowledge and embracing the idea of the community as a collective learner.
So it's a call to action for all of us.
It is.
Whether we're in formal leadership positions or not.
Right.
We can't just sit back and wait for someone else to create the kind of learning environment we desire.
We need to be active participants in shaping the culture of our communities.
And that brings us full circle to praxis.
Yes. Our actions shape our beliefs, and our beliefs shape our actions.
It's a beautiful dynamic interplay.
It is.
So if we want to cultivate a more vibrant and engaging learning environment in our churches, we need to ask ourselves, what actions can I take today?
Yes.
What small step can I make to contribute to that vision?
That's a powerful question for each of us to ponder.
It is.
This research provides a valuable framework.
It does.
For understanding the dynamics of Christian education. But it's up to each of us to apply these insights to our own unique contexts.
The journey continues.
It does.
And we hope this deep dive has given you some new perspectives and tools to take with you on that journey.
Remember, it's not about finding all the answers.
Right.
Or creating some perfect model of Christian education.
No, it's about the process.
It's about nurturing that spirit of curiosity, humility, and a willingness to learn and grow together as a community of faith.
Beautifully said. On that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. We encourage you to keep exploring those questions that spark your curiosity and keep diving deeper into the mysteries of faith. Until next time.